Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. It's NAIDOC Week, and out today is the MJA's annual Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health issue. Professor Geoffrey Thompson is the Deputy Medical Editor in charge of the issue, and he's my special guest on the pod today. Did you have any particular theme in mind when you were pulling this issue together?
Kate, I think the overall theme of the journal has been developed over the years to reach a point now where we see the mix of cultural awareness and scientific quality as being paramount. So that's what we focus on with the types of submissions we like to receive, the types of articles we like to publish.
Yep.
And the message that we want to get across is that we don't obviously have any room for lack of cultural awareness, but in saying that, we also need to have high quality scientific research. And one of the wonderful things that recently we've really started reaching that point, and in that this issue of the journal is reaching a pinnacle of combining culturally aware methodology with high quality scientific outputs. And we've published a collection of papers in this issue, which we're proud of. They're great.
There's some cracking research in here, isn't there? The research on absolute cardiovascular disease risk. It's an Australian first.
It's an Australian first in that it relates to Indigenous people in our culture, and that's what the MJA prides itself in, publishing the high-quality research that affects our Indigenous people. But it's the first also in that it's recognised a particular demographic that is hugely important to Indigenous health and closing the gap of knowing that cardiovascular disease is the highest risk that our Indigenous people face.
Yes.
And to recognise that in this 25 to 34 year old age group, which we hadn't really highlighted, that more of the people in that group have high primary risk without other manifestations of cardiovascular disease. So they've not had any symptomatology.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that percentage is greater than the non-Indigenous older group that
yes.
we actually include in our guidelines.
Yes.
And so it's crazy that we haven't done that before.
And it's hopefully this will lead to a change in the guidelines for screening for Indigenous populations as well. It might hopefully drop it from 35 years on to maybe 25 years on.
Look, absolutely. It's one of the things that Brown and his colleagues highlighted in their article a year or so ago. And we still haven't done it yet, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And yes, we have to do that. But we have to do more, because it's not just and recognising is obviously number one. Number two is doing something about it.
Yeah.
And again, we have a suite of suggestions from Brown et al. Earlier. We also have a beautiful article in this issue that no doubt we'll talk about around immunisation.
Yes.
But in the case of cardiovascular disease, it gives a window to really have an effective way of intervening, which the idea of lipid-lowering therapies obviously makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
There may be other approaches as well, as we've recently seen with aspirin. But to use Aboriginal health workers to just kick out the people who need these therapies, and I think Hendry and Atal said maybe half the people that need this therapy aren't getting it.
Yes.
So if we can lift that to 95% or greater,
brilliant,
then we're going to have huge impact on cardiovascular disease, one would think.
Indeed. And you mentioned the vaccination story. That's research by Hendry and colleagues. It is a good news story, isn't it? In New South Wales, at least, that the gap is pretty much in at least one age milestone. It's pretty much closed.
Well, this is a world first in our
yes.
community. It's the first time that we've actually reached a point where immunisation, which, you know, we know from what the WHO says that this is one of the most important markers of intervention that we have is immunisation rates. So immunisation rates, hugely important. We've actually succeeded in for the very first time in actually having immunisation rates higher in the Indigenous group in some of these age ranges than in non-Indigenous. And that's where we have to be. And we've achieved it through a pretty simple, culturally aware approach that just simply brings to attention people who haven't been immunised, suggests ways of getting that done, follows them up in a very culturally appropriate manner, which has obviously been accepted by those people beautifully to result in the outcomes we've seen.
I should mention that with these three pieces of research, we've also got three cracking podcasts. We've had a chat with Deborah Randall on the multimorbidity research. We've got Professor Emily Banks chatting about the cardiovascular risk research, and we've got Dr. Frank Beard talking about the vaccination research. So if you want to get into those stories, that's the way in, is through those three authors who are just right on top of their game. It's terrific stuff. The MJA's Indigenous Health Issue is, of course, available online at mja.com.au from the 2nd of July. Every piece of Indigenous content is open access and not just the research. Meanwhile, I'm chatting today with Jeff Thompson, who was the Deputy Medical Editor who brought the issue together. The two perspectives we've got are that are particularly noteworthy, I think, are the ones on the HIV crisis or upcoming crisis, if we're not careful, in the Indigenous community, and YARNUPS, medical YARNUPS, which I think is a terrific model for weight loss. Can you tell us a little bit about, were those stories commissioned or did they submit?
No, they were just random submissions, we're just seeing a very high rate of high quality submissions, and you know, we're in a position where we can't publish them all, unfortunately, because and that's a position that we haven't been in the luxury of having. And it reflects, obviously, the fact that we've actually changed our approach to have this mix of both science and cultural awareness at the forefront. And we've got a lot of really good people around Australia which who are contributing. And I think, you know, this is a reflection of what the journal does, because we're all aware of Closing the Gap. It's a great campaign. It's obviously brought awareness to the whole of the nation about Indigenous gaps and the need to close them. To actually achieve that, though, in health, we also need understanding of the individual components. So we need to know about disease processes, epidemiology, intervention delivery, and the cultural mechanisms that influence how we achieve significant change. So these are much more micro components than the iconic Closing the Gap. But as a health community across Australia, we've actually achieved great things. You know, we published last year in the Indigenous issue the fact that despite all the barriers that we're aware of, just through those clinical interventions, we've actually at least kept pace in the Indigenous setting in mortality improvement over some 40 or 50 years with the non-Indigenous. So, you know, we've kept pace. We haven't closed, well, we have closed some of the gaps. We're doing okay. But that's because we've actually focused on these rather small components. And we mustn't ignore the fact that clinicians are achieving great things.
Yes.
And we have to continue to support that. So that's what we try to do as a journal. And we see the fruits in the submissions that you talk about.
When I was having a chat with Emily Banks from ANU, she was saying that on the CVD risk research, there were four Indigenous authors, and it was her hope to become more and more invisible. Are you noticing more and more Indigenous authors submitting?
Look, we are, and you know, again, I think as a journal, we've perhaps taken a step away from a time when we required an Indigenous author on a paper to
that more
mature approach of saying we want the research methodology, the presentation of the paper, the interpretations to be culturally aware. That doesn't necessarily require an Indigenous author, but it certainly requires that more mature approach. And, you know, I guess it's a bit of Dame Roma Mitchell, who, you know, was a great feminist. And you'll remember she very famously said that she longed for the time when appointment of a woman to a top job got the same publicity as appointment of a man to a top job.
Yes.
And, you know, that's what we want to achieve in Indigenous health as well, where we just don't need to comment. We would love to be in a place where we don't need to comment on cultural awareness.
Exactly.
Look, we should just mention Gunasekera's articles on Otatus Media. They did some equally beautiful research looking at the agreement between audiologists and ENTs on Otatus Media in Indigenous children. And they showed that audiologists can triage in areas where specialist services are limited with a very low false negative rate. It's about 3%.
Well, that's great.
So the audiologist did brilliantly. And, you know, obviously we still need the ENT interventions, but to be able to screen them out to detect the children who need help is a huge step forward. And that sort of research is brilliant.
I mean, what I'm gathering from the vaccination research, the CVD research, the Otitis Media stuff, is that the more we can get healthcare workers, hopefully Indigenous healthcare workers, out into the bush, out into the communities, the better we're going to deal with these health problems that have to be fixed.
Yeah, look, and you know, to maybe take that further, the more we can have culturally aware people in those settings, you know, and obviously we're doing it very well. We have a long way to go, but we certainly aren't at the starting blocks anymore.
That's
been a big step forward.
So it's a bit of a good news issue in many ways. There's a lot of progress there, isn't there?
I think we see that you know, some people are negative, but there are ways forward. We've shown as a journal that we can identify ways forward that are meaningful and make progress, and we're continuing to do that and build each year slowly but surely in a way that says we can do this.
Thanks, mate.
Brilliant stuff, Kate.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts, or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.